There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast with me, Richard Dean. This is our daily podcast that brings together the best bits of today's show from Tuesday, October the 8th.
It's not easy being green. Seems you blend in with so many other...
We've been having a very long and involved conversation with you about what your company is doing to go green. The Greta effect. Are firms here feeling the pressure, rightly, I would say, to step up their environmental efforts? Richard.
All inspired by Greta Thunberg, the teenager who was at the United Nations recently. This was her in an impassioned plea.
I shouldn't be up here. I should be back in school on the other side of the ocean. Yet you all come to us young people for hope. How dare you? You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words. And yet I'm one of the lucky ones.
And that is the UN, though, in New York. We've seen climate protests in London yesterday, virtually shutting down, traffic-wise, at least the area around Westminster, over 130 arrests. We've also seen a lot of protests in Australia, in Germany now. We're going to see more this weekend. But here in the UAE, are companies feeling that climate pressure?
The short answer is yes. And the reason we know that is that HSBC did a bunch of research into this recently. They produced a report on sustainable finance and investing in the region. And they found that exactly that. Big investors are demanding that the companies they either invest in or lend money to do take these things seriously. We spoke to Sabrine Rothman, head of sustainability for HSBC in this region.
Well, to be honest, we wanted to understand how the global movement and the global noise that you hear around climate change, how that was being translated in this region by various investors, by issuers and so forth. And we felt that that would give us a deeper insight into what was needed in terms of the gaps, but also where the opportunities might be. And I think what was quite interesting is that more than 50% of issuers believe that they're already being affected by global warming, and over 90% expect to see real impact on business over the next decade. So very clearly sent us a message that this is a very live and present issue here in the Middle East.
Well, that is pressure coming from investors. What about pressure coming from inside a company, from colleagues, from employees? Maha Zatari is the Managing Director of Great Place to Work. That is the organisation that every year puts out a report saying really what your employees think of you, how happy they are. And we asked her about the shift we were seeing from companies when it came to adopting sustainable strategies.
We are definitely at a time where individuals, organizations, and corporates are increasingly prioritizing sustainability as an essential part of their policies and practices. And that collective movement towards a sustainable future is leading to a huge change in the corporate landscape. Some of the key interesting initiatives that Great Place to Work came across through the annual research that we do are more on the environmental pillar of sustainability, and it ranged from small initiatives like waste management program, green initiatives, to a huge community service sustainable efforts.
So there you go. Pressure from investors, pressure from employees. And of course, one of the biggies is pressures from customers. Unilever have just come out and said that they're going to be drastically slashing the amount of plastic that they use around the globe. Unilever CEO Alan Jope can probably explain it better than I. He's been telling CNBC what they're going to do and how they're going to do it.
In 2017, we laid out some goals on plastic that at the time were seen as very ambitious, but I think the world has moved on since then, and so we want to raise the bar. And we've made this commitment that we'll reduce our virgin plastic in half and that we'll collect more than we use. The way that we'll reduce the virgin plastic in half is by first an absolute reduction in the amount of plastic that we use, and that's going to require our best innovative capability to come up with different packaging formats. But also we're going to make much more use of recycled material, stuff that the consumer has put into recycling streams and which we're able to use. And by doing that, we hope to trigger the continued development of the recycled material business system.
And Alan Jope was very, very upfront when he spoke to CNBC about this initiative, which they've only just announced, about the fact that cutting plastics was going to help with the company's growth, with sales, by attracting new customers.
Ultimately, stepping up our growth is about being relevant to consumers. And we know that as younger generations of consumers come through the population, businesses that conduct themselves responsibly and brands that offer choices to buy products that are sustainably sourced are more relevant and people shift their purchasing behavior. And so in that way, by making sure that our portfolio is relevant to the younger groups of consumers coming into the economy, that will be part of our overall growth step up.
And we've been speaking, in fact, to Unilever here in the UAE to find out how this global pledge to cut half of their plastic in 5 years is going to play out here in the Gulf. This is Pragya Sharma, who is the strategy director for Unilever Gulf.
As part of our commitment, we will be investing in waste infrastructure and building on some of brilliant partnerships that we've had in place already. Like, we are working here in the UAE with the support of the Ministry of Environment and Climate Change and through many industry coalitions to invest in some of this infrastructure. So the collection mechanism would be about, we will collect more than 600,000 tons of material annually by 2025. That's our commitment. And as I said, this is through investments in partnerships. It's purchasing and using recycled plastic in our packaging. We will also be participating in voluntary extended producer responsibility schemes where Unilever directly pays for the collection of its packaging. So these are some of the measures that we are putting in place in the collection agenda that we have committed to.
Yeah, that's Pragya Sharma, the strategy director for Unilever Gulf.
Also been speaking to one restaurateur in Dubai who's recently refurbished a restaurant with a number of sustainable initiatives. Dirk van Haar is director of SWR Hospitality. You've probably never heard of SWR, but some of their restaurants, they've got lots of Belgian specialty beverage outlets around town, and a restaurant called Maison Mathis, which includes a restaurant at Arabian Ranches. That's the one that they've recently given a green makeover to. We spoke to Dirk and this is what he told us.
We decided about 1 year ago that we want to follow the trend of the sustainable city and want to be moving forward like this. So we started first with ditching the straws. However, from there we thought we want to take it a couple of steps forward because we believe that that not only was enough to do this. So we, during our renovation over the summer, we introduced a vertical farming units. It basically means that we are making all our own lettuces and herbs in our own outlet. So we are aiming for 50% on the long run that we can do this. Furthermore, we decided to step away from plastic bottles, single-use plastic bottles, and we moved into filtered tap water. This became very popular because in total we are doing about 30,000 bottles per year in this unit. So this is now totally eliminated. One of the other ones, and it's a bit of a smaller, but still we are not buying any juices anymore for our guests. We are making it all ourselves. So we have no single-use plastic anymore for the juices.
This is the Business Breakfast on Dubai Eye 103.8.
The authority on the issues that matter.
We're talking about the Greta effect, Greta Thunberg, the activist who has sparked climate protests around the world. And we're asking, what impact is it having specifically on companies here in the UAE? Joining us in the studio now is environmental activist, I think it's fair to call her, the founder and managing director of Goombook, Tatiana Antonelli Abella. Tatiana, thanks for seeing us.
Thanks for having me.
So the first question is the Greta effect. Are we seeing one here in the UAE? Are you noticing that more companies are sitting up and taking notice of this and realizing that they have to do something when it comes to climate change and sustainability?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think companies have started because of Greta. I think the companies I've seen moving towards, you know, less emissions and fighting climate change, it's a journey. They've started a long time ago. What I can see is a change of mindset in the wider community. The youth is reacting, the general public is reacting. But companies here, I have to say, there's a movement that has started maybe 6-7 years ago. There are processes that have been put in place. You have groups such as the UN Global Compact Local Chapter, where companies, you know, they sign in to basically act under the Sustainable Development Goals. So there is a whole community here of companies who are really engaged. It might have an effect on smaller companies, on SMEs who first are maybe a first time into this new world of climate change, you know, fight, or it's not really a fight anymore. I think it's more of a action. I would like to call it action. And this is what companies are doing now, right? They act for climate change.
So who's doing really well at the moment here in the UAE and what are they doing specifically? Can you give us a couple of examples?
Well, there's one group that really has been really strong, and it's the Majida Futaim group. Throughout all their retails and malls and hotels, they've been working on reduction of emissions through, you know, retrofitting all their building, changing LED lights, moving towards solar. Definitely I can see the group having a big impact.
And you think that this is meaningful, because a lot of organizations will have a sustainability strategy, a nice PowerPoint presentation and a few token gestures. But you've been in this business long enough to spot the difference between something that's meaningful and something that's just a little bit of PR and greenwashing. And you're convinced that what MAF is doing with shopping malls like Mall of the Emirates and other parts of its empire, you're convinced that it's real.
It's real also because it's they report on it. So it's not something they just, you know, write about. They follow the GRI, they follow all...
The GRI?
The Global Reporting Initiative.
Okay.
So basically you have to report on specific targets and goals, and it's an international certification. So it's not something you can invent. And this is very important for companies who want to be trusted and who want to be, you know, to legitimize their efforts to follow global standards and report on what they're doing. Facts are much more important than any, you know, PowerPoint presentation.
One of the things we're interested in at the moment is companies that maybe aren't committed to doing this, but being forced into doing it because their customers, particularly young customers, are forcing them to do it. Alan Bajani, the CEO of MAF, who we know well, genuinely is committed to do this, and it's coming from the heart. But we're almost more interested in people who don't really believe in it, but are grudgingly being forced into it because consumers are basically not going to buy their products or services if they don't get on the train. Are we seeing that yet?
Yes and no. Recently, I was judging at an award on sustainability, and it was on SMEs, right? So SMEs were submitting their own companies under sustainable initiatives or CSR. But at the end of the day, when we were actually looking at what they're doing, it was more of either a marketing stunt, as you said before, wanting to be part of this big movement, but not really know how to. And definitely consumers play a huge role. The demand is changing, and so companies will have to change.
And investors as well. We heard from the guys from HSBC earlier on. They did some research just last week in the Middle East saying that investors into big companies won't put their money there unless people have genuine ESG, environmental, sustainable, and governance initiatives in place. So what are the quick wins that companies can do to make a difference in terms of sustainability and being more environmentally friendly? If we've got CEOs, business owners, managers driving to work this morning, listening to this, what are the quick wins that they can do?
First thing is understand throughout just the offices, for example, or their operations, how they can reduce CO2 emissions. One thing we do with companies, and it helps also the management and the employees understand what it means. It's a simple thing such as, you know, removing bottled water into your offices. Bottled water, at the end, it creates pollution. It's a lot of waste. The production of plastic bottles required a lot of water and oil. And if you, by the moment you remove bottled water from your offices, you actually are able to also reduce your CO2 emissions, reduce waste. And that has, it seems almost not possible, but a simple gesture as this can reduce a lot your CO2 emissions. So HSBC that you just mentioned last year joined the campaign Drop It, and they removed 6,000 bottles a day. So because there are 3,000 employees and it was 2 bottles every person.
So that's one quick win. Remove the plastic water bottles. What else can people do?
Retrofitting, so changing your lightings. And that requires investment. So there's also, you know, 2 different aspects. There are quick wins that actually you're going to save money and you remove things from your daily operation. Other things that will require budget and investment. So definitely looking at your energy consumption.
What's the payback time on these things now? if you're going to change all your lights, for example, to LED lights in a building, I think we all have to have LED lights now, but if you're going to retrofit, I don't know, more efficient air conditioning, what are the typical payback times now?
It can be 3 years, 5 years. It also depends on what you're going to choose. You know, you have different products on the market, but yes, it's not something you in within 1 year, you're back into your investment. It's something that takes longer.
Aren't companies willing to put the financial investments in at the moment? I mean, we know budgets are tight. What's the conversations you're having?
Yeah, if you look at, for example, Shahu Group, what they've just did is all their warehouses now have solar panels, right? It's not something that cheap to do. It took them maybe a couple of years actually to do it. So it's not only the investment in the actual solar panels, it's also the 2 years of research on understanding how to do it. It's time. It's a vision. It requires the top management to be involved in this, and it's for the better, right? And for a long-term vision. So definitely it's a vision.
Tatiana, appreciate you joining us. Tatiana Antonelli Abella is the founder and managing director of Goombook. It's a social enterprise that raises awareness in the community on sustainability and green living. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
This is the Business Breakfast on Dubai Eye 103.8.
The authority on the issues that matter.
Samsung Electronics, the world's biggest smartphone maker. It's very much a glass half full or half empty kind of story, but the markets seem to like it. The share price is up about 1.5%. So I'll give you the good news first of all. Samsung, also the world's largest producer of memory chips, said it expects third quarter operating profit of $6.5 billion, and that is better than expected. Revenue also better than expected. And that's because we're reaching the end of a downturn in memory chips. So what we've had over the past few months is a glut of memory chips. Samsung makes memory chips. You've had two things happening. Firstly, there was a boom last year. Samsung's profits were mega last year, huge demand for memory chips. But two things have happened. One, in response to that surging demand for memory chips, lots of people built memory chip factories, and now we have too many, coupled with concerns about the trade war, and there is slowing demand for things like electronic gadgets, things like smartphones, data servers as well. There's less investment of those. So you've got this supply glut of new memory chips, or you've had this supply glut just as the demand has been falling. So that's why profit is down 56% this quarter at Samsung against last year. But the analysts seem pretty positive about it. Avril Wu, for example, is director at something called DRAM Exchange, or DRAM Exchange. It's a specialist that looks at the memory chip business. And we're approaching the end of a downturn. And the Wall Street Journal is pretty positive as well, saying that Samsung Electronics' expectations for third quarter earnings provided some enthusiasm that the global tech supply chain could be nearing a rebound. So even though Samsung's profit is down by 56%, it's a good news story, and the share price is up about 1.5% today, up 23% this year.
And the folding phone is making its way to the UAE. Apparently pre-orders went live yesterday for the folding phone Mark II. This time with folding that works.
And there have been a number of reviews overnight on the various tech websites about the folding phone. Because remember, 6 months ago, they had a false start, didn't they? They sent it out to journalists. The journalist said, this is rubbish, it doesn't work, it breaks. So Samsung said, oops, let's pull that one back.
Which you think, I mean, it was one of those things that, I mean, we love a big something going wonderfully wrong, don't we, publicly? So I think there was a certain air of glee for journalists when they realised that the screen was peeling from a corner or whatever happened to go. Different things went wrong with different screens. But it is the sort of thing you want to make sure that you've got absolutely, absolutely right before you send it out to the press. Let's hope it's back together this time.
$2,000 is what they say they're going to be charging. $1,980 is looking like the base price for that phone. That's what, 7,000 dirhams, which is, I mean, you'd have thought who would pay that for a phone, but you know, people are paying 3,000-4,000-ish dirhams for the top end Samsungs and Apples at the moment.
If
so
you'd have told
that
me
much of a stretch
5 years ago that I would have paid what I've just paid for the mobile phone that I bought about 6 months ago, I would have laughed at you. That's how quickly we've got used to that being the norm.
Stay with technology. E-scooters. Mubadala is investing in a German e-scooter company.
It is. It's investing in one that I have to admit I hadn't heard of. It's called T frontier mobility, but it is one that is expanding rapidly across Europe. The CEO has recently been asked if they're looking at going further afield and into North America, and he said that no, the continent, so Europe is his, and I quote, laser focus. But really interesting to see big money, $60 million, some of it from Mubadala, going into an e-scooter sharing company, because there's been a lot of back and forwards on scooters, hasn't there, in terms of safety is the big one, but also socially, how people are taking to them. There's been a bit of a snarky backlash in some places. Interestingly, Abu Dhabi does have an e-scooter company that has been licensed to use the scooters. They're still off the ranks here, aren't they, in Dubai? They're still a no-go in Dubai, I think, at the moment.
Well, I'm looking at, from March, this is when it came out, the RTA did ban scooters, but there's some caveats. It's not a total ban on electric scooters in Dubai, but companies have been barred from renting them out. The Roads and Transport Authority clarified here. So if you own your own, it's okay. This is officials quoted as saying that you can use your e-scooters in closed areas or if they are allowed by the Dubai municipality, including in parks and inside campuses. So it's not black and white on whether or not they're banned or not here.
But in Abu Dhabi, there is one rental company that got given the green light. It's not the one that Mubadala has just invested in, though, which I would have thought would have made perfect sense. But the one in Abu Dhabi is called Cirq. This one is Tier Mobility. It's a different company, but they have obviously looked at it and thought that there is a future in e-scooters, in renting e-scooters.
This is the Business Breakfast on Dubai Eye 103.8.
The authority on the issues that matter.
We're talking about doing the right things morally and legally.
Can you blow my whistle, baby, let me know. Girl, I'm gonna show you how to do it, and we start real slow. You just put your lips together.
Whistleblowing all over the news at the moment, from news of a second Trump whistleblower in the US to Bloomberg reports about the future of the Gowen whistleblower. But what protection is there for whistleblowers here in the UAE? We are joined by Nicholas Braganza, who is Legal Director of Regulatory and Investigations at the law firm Clyde & Co. Nicholas, it's lovely to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Nice to be here.
Let's make this simple. Are whistleblowers protected under UAE law?
In a word, no, there is, the position is changing. I think generally whistleblowers have had to move with caution with dealing with wrongdoing that they uncover in their organisation and informing their management or informing third parties, the police, regulators. However, there have been some recent developments in Dubai, specifically within the DIFC, the Dubai International Financial Centre, where there is now protection for whistleblowers under the new DIFC operating law, which came into force last November.
What does that protection look like? What are we actually talking about when we talk about protection?
So in the DIFC, there inevitably it's focused on financial institutions and registered person, registered entities within the DIFC, and they have an obligation to report wrongdoing in their organisations. A failure to do so can result in a fine. So it encourages whistleblowers to come forward, and there is now a specific protection for whistleblowers under this law, which says that disclosures made in good faith, in accordance with the law, will not be prosecuted. So those who disclose will not be subject to legal ramifications.
But that's just in DIFC.
But that's just in the DIFC. There is a law also in onshore Dubai, and that was passed in 2016. And that was to do with the Economic Security Centre, which was established in 2016. But that's only disclosures made to that that entity. So generally, there is no protection in onshore UAE.
Well, let's talk about the UAE, because Theo wrote in about this a while ago, saying, and he quoted a piece of legislation in particular, which I know that you're familiar with. He says Article 379 of the UAE Penal Code is the one you've got to look at here. I know you've written about this in the past. In simple terms, what is that? And then what does it mean for whistleblowing?
So Article 2379 deals with disclosure of confidential information. And so there are criminal sanctions if you, in the course of your profession, craft, become aware of confidential information and then disclose it to third parties. So there are serious legal consequences for disclosing confidential information about your company. And this has always been something that has deterred whistleblowers in the past.
Even if you disclose it to the police?
Well, if you disclose wrongful conduct to the police, there is protections, but it needs to be balanced against this disclosure of confidential information. Because arguably, yes, you could still get into hot water if you are disclosing confidential information about your profession. There's also the defamation risk, which you'll be well familiar with as well.
We do have evidence or cases here in the UAE. Abraj, the private equity group, which effectively collapsed last year, was a $15 billion organization. There was a whistleblower close to Abraj who wrote letters or sent emails to potential investors. And that's how the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and others discovered what was going on. What are the implications of that among legal circles when you guys get together over a cup of coffee in DIFC and have a chat about this? How do those conversations go?
I can't talk too much about Abraj. We're involved indirectly, but it is interesting to see that this is the main way that wrongdoing, especially in such financial institutions, comes to the fore. This is the way that that management or third-party regulators become aware of it. And traditionally in the US and the UK and other jurisdictions, this is how the wrongdoing is uncovered. And so it's in the interests of regulation and government passing laws to make a regulatory framework to protect whistleblowers.
Very quickly, Nicholas, yeah. If someone came to you and said, look, I've found out some stuff that's going on in my company, it is fraudulent, what would you advise them to do? How would you advise them to tread?
Good that you're speaking to me. Get some legal advice. That's always a good step. I think a lot of international companies and increasingly local companies now do have protection for whistleblowers, not from the law, but from employment contracts, employment policies, which will protect whistleblowers. And we strongly encourage companies generally to put in place these whistleblowers protection policies to encourage whistleblowers within an organisation, if there's wrongdoing, to talk about it.
Nicholas Bragenza, Legal Director for Regulatory and Investigations at Clyde & Co. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much indeed for listening. We're back live on air tomorrow morning from 6 a.m.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.